This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Welcome to the Detours Travel Show here on Joy 94.9. It is a fabulous Saturday, and it's nearly Easter or Passover, depending what faith you are. And I'm very, very happy today because I'm actually on holidays.
Oh, that's fantastic to be on holidays and to be paneling and hosting a travel show.
You're the lucky one, Jodie.
Yeah, but I'm not going anywhere. I'm just hanging in Melbourne, and but that's a good thing too. We've got the International Comedy Festival, a whole bunch of things on.
And the Grand Prix this weekend, of course, if you can take some time out to go down there and check out Mark Webber and, of course, our Macca, who's there somewhere.
Now, it is worth checking out, Lynn and Jodie, if you actually walk up Swanson Street, as I did this morning, if you're listening from Sydney, what are you doing in Sydney? You should be in Melbourne. This is the place to be, particularly this weekend. There are people relaxed and calm, and mums and dads, and people going to the football, people going to the comedy festival, people gearing up to go to the Grand Prix, and everyone's calm as a date. It might be a different thing at about 11 o'clock tonight.
11 o'clock, it might be a little bit outrageous, I think, there, Greg. But like I always say, you know, if you get bored in Melbourne, there's something wrong, because there's always something on every weekend. And if you don't like that, you can pop down to the NGV, because Merck, I always get the pronunciation of his name incorrect. His exhibition is still on, and there's a fabulous installation upstairs for contemporary art. So, you know, get out there this weekend. That's what I say.
Do
get
it.
Get off the sofa puddings.
And also, now, I've got to share this before we get going. I've got to share this. I was down at the airport last night dropping Chongy off on his budget AirAsia flight to KL. We're somewhere in KL this morning. Now, this is a brickbat to AirAsia. Get your act together, guys. I know you're growing and you're developing new markets. However, when you have people waiting for a plane, a whole plane load, all there on time 3 hours before, you have one premium book in person, you've got one person for internet, and no one's booked on the internet, you know, no one's done their checking on the internet, and you've got one person handling everyone else, and then the first 10 people take 20 minutes each because they've got overweight luggage. Get your act together. In fact, I think we should have a little... I might even go out and buy some scales for AirAsia. We'll badge them up with Joy 94.9 Detours, and we'll put them out at the airport so people can weigh their luggage before they get to check in.
Whilst they're in the queue, yeah. So they can actually offload everything that they didn't need to begin with.
Exactly right.
And can we have Detours uniforms?
Yes, I think we can. We can. Yes.
Well, if you've got suggestions... If you have
just
suggestions
like the
out there, what would you like to see Lindsay and Jodie wearing for Detours uniforms?
Oh, yeah.
little Pam Ann sets.
That would be very nice. I'd like that. Now, coming up very shortly on the program here on Detours with Jodie, Lindsay and Greg, we have George, who was born in Lebanon. And he has lived in Australia for a number of years, and he's going to talk about all things sort of Middle East, but also Austria, Vienna, and just interesting travel stuff, yeah. Which is, of course, what you'd expect on the Detours Travel Show. And we'll also be crossing live to Macca at the Grand Prix later on during the program.
Actually, the Grand Prix will be live. I think Macca will be a pre-recording.
Oh, really?
Because the drink stand will be open.
Well, before we do that, let's hear a bit of song, a bit of music you can leave your hat on here on Joy 94.9.
Gay and lesbian radio for everyone. Joy 94.9.
Wherever we live, work and play, safety affects all parts of our lives.
Community safety is everyone's responsibility, and there are things we can do to make our homes, workplaces, streets, neighbourhoods and communities safer.
Victoria Police GLOWS, Crime Stoppers, the Anti-Violence Project and Joy 94.9 working together to help make our community safe.
Are you 25 years of age or younger?
Gay, lesbian,
bisexual,
queer, same-sex attracted,
transgendered.
Share your coming out story at Joy 94.9 and they'll be played on air during National Youth Week in April. Come share your story with the world. No last names, and you can make up a fake one if you want. To register your interest or to ask any questions, email yc@joy.org.au.
Yes, you can come share your story with Joy, but you can come share your travel experiences on Detours here with Jodie, Lindsay and Greg here in the studio at Joy 94.9. Now, if you want to share some messages with us, 0427-JOY-949 hits us in the inbox with your SMS, or you can call 1300-JOY-949 and leave a message with Heath at reception, who'd love to hear from you. And you can email onair@joy.org.au. And Jodie, our guest today is George. Now, George is a... I reckon George is quite an exciting man. I first met George when he was swimming under me in the swimming pool.
Your way of introduction.
You were swimming under me in the swimming pool, George. George does a lot of underwater swimming. He's got great breath and stamina for swimming and holding his breath and doing slow, deep thought swimming. And you passed under me. That's when I first saw you, George.
Oh, well, I can't remember that.
You were too focused.
I made an impression there.
Now, you're a Lebanese man that was born in Lebanon.
Yes.
And spent your whole formative years...
That's right.
...growing up in Lebanon.
That's right.
And then came to Australia. And today we're going to unpack some of your travel stories.
Yeah, some of the latest travels that I've done over the Christmas period.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what made your... Oh, I'm presuming it was a family decision to come to Australia, was it?
Yes, I did it on my own, actually.
Oh, right. Okay.
I started my studies back home, and I had to finish them at the University of Sydney when I was 23 years old. So I graduated with a Bachelor of Architecture and then moved to Melbourne. I love Melbourne so much. There's so many things happening in Melbourne. Sorry, Sydney. But
well, actually, we've got just an email from Lucas and Gregory from Bris Vegas, who are saying that they're really happy to hear us, and that we're making the long night shift bearable. But yeah, you know, Melbourne is the place to be, isn't it?
It is indeed. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Grand Prix too. So
Yes. Well, it's all happening out there now. Your time here then in Melbourne, you've come in an exciting time of your life as an adult.
That's
into
right.
Melbourne.
Yes.
But going back to Lebanon for Christmas, what sort of thoughts and views about returning to the family fold does that generate for a man with his Lebanese roots?
Yes, it does. Well, I was actually very excited to see them all. I haven't seen them for 3.5 years. We've kept the contact via telephone, but... It was Christmas. It was family orientated. We celebrate Christmas in our family. So I arrived there at 24th of December. It was perfect for the Christmas dinner. We do have a Christmas dinner and a Christmas lunch. So everything was ready for me, and all I had to do is just eat, basically.
It's hard work.
And kiss everyone. We kiss a lot in Lebanon.
Yeah, yeah. So what sort of kisses do you give in to friends or family in Lebanon?
Well, generally we'll give 3 kisses on the cheeks, of course.
And which is the right cheek to start, George? Is it left or you start at the right?
It depends on how the movement is starting. Mm. You know, you would be able to tell straight away when you're kissing someone. But,
right. So there's no rule of thumb with that?
Not really, right. No. But normally, normally it's 3.
Rule of cheek, yeah.
Normally it's 3.
Okay.
So I got used to the 2 kisses in Australia, and when I stop at 2 and they can see the other guy or the other woman, going for the third one. Oh, I have to do the third one.
Hey, George, can I ask about Christmas lunch? Was it the way that we celebrate Christmas, like the turkey and things like that, or do you have sort of more traditional foods?
No, we did have a turkey, but we did have a lot of other Lebanese sort of its and bits and finger foods. So it's turkey with a twist.
Oh, that sounds heaven. I think Lebanon for next Christmas is the way to go. It's always so stodgy, you know. Like, it's amazing on Christmas Day here that we have these, you know, turkeys and there's ham and there's God knows what else. And the poor women are slaving over the oven. But, you know, a little bit of hummus and baba ganoush and things like that would be just heavenly, I think.
They were definitely on the menu.
Well, what was on the menu for Christmas dinner in Lebanon?
Well, there was this gibby sort of bowls filled with diced meat and pine nuts and hummus and baba ganoush for sure.
What is baba ganoush?
It's eggplant mashed with tahini and garlic and lemon. Yum. Served with some olive oil. It's quite good.
It's out of this world.
Yeah, the Lebanese cuisine has got a variety of vegetarian dishes for all of you vegetarians out there.
And if you have meat, what's the main meat that one would have?
Well, we had vine leaves with lamb chops. And the turkey, of course. And that was it for meat, I think. We don't have seafood. There's not a big seafood industry produced in Lebanon. So generally it's imported, and it's not part of the traditions to have, because it's winter, we don't have prawns and like we do in Australia.
Mm. So what sort of temperature is it in Lebanon at Christmas time?
Well, you would expect to be winter there, but when I was there, it was like 23, global warming, 24.
But still Beirut. Pleasant.
It's very pleasant. It was very sunny. We had the occasional a week of rain nonstop and snow on the mountains, but other than that, it was pretty good.
Now, what's it like? I mean, you've lived there, you've grown up for a long time there, you've come here and you're watching the news about some really horrendous events that take place in the Middle East.
Yes.
When you arrive, are you a little bit on tenterhooks? Have you enculturated some of those Western views about the safety or whether or not it's safe to return home?
Well, it is quite safe, but you're always aware that it's a volatile situation, especially in the Middle East, rather than as an internal conflicts in Lebanon. But you're always aware of that. I've become Australian citizen, which is a bit of a different story now. You've got consular support overseas, and that makes a big difference. But yeah, you can feel the tensity and the tension in the area. There's lots of talks on the news every day. You know, there's always the threat of war or the next war.
And then for Christmas, people hang that on the shelf and sit down and relax as a family.
Not only for Christmas, but for every day, because people sort of learn that they have to live every day. Actually, day by day, rather than thinking of what's coming in the future, because you'd never know these big countries, but they will decide one day, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a great way of dealing and coping. And I assume with Christmas, you're Christians in Lebanon.
Yes, yes. I'm a Christian. I'm a Catholic, actually.
Yeah. So you're a Catholic minority in a predominantly Muslim world.
Well, it's. I think the numbers of Christians in Lebanon is decreasing, but. Yeah, I mean, it has been always, you know, 50-50, but now I think the balance changed to 75-25.
See, I think we have a perception here that it's actually more Muslim than Christian, but 50-50, I mean, it's pretty a long-standing tradition of coexistence of two dominant religions living alongside each other.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And George, your friends who you grew up with and went to school with, where did they scatter around the world to?
Well,
or did they stay in Lebanon?
Well, most of them have travelled and or migrated like I did. Some of them are in Canada, United States, Australia. And whoever, I mean, if someone hasn't decided to migrate, he or she definitely working in one of the Arab countries like the Emirates or Qatar or in Europe, basically. We are forced to study three languages for this purpose. So we were born knowing that one day we have to leave, unfortunately.
Wow.
Yes.
And what languages did you learn?
Well, it's mandatory to learn Arabic, English and French. And you've got the fourth option, which is now being enforced by the government. But you have the choice of Spanish or German or Chinese.
As the fourth language?
Yes, you're forced to learn the fourth language, but you have a choice of one of the three.
Wow. That's amazing. I mean, the Chinese would be the industrial strength of China and the relationships governments want to form, but Germany, a German language, when you've learnt French already, I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
Well, we are big fans of German sort of industry. We buy a lot of German products. And a lot of people who have got an engineer tendency would rather go to Germany to study engineering there because France, because they've mastered that skill.
Mm-hmm.
When you were in Lebanon for this trip at Christmas time, George, you then headed on to Austria and Vienna.
Yeah, the plan was to spend Christmas in Lebanon and then meet with my international friend student that I studied at the University of Sydney in Austria to celebrate New Year's. And it was a great idea because we met from all over the globe. And this is what I love about Australia. It's an opportunity to meet with a lot of international audience, especially at the universities. And we met there and we had a crazy New Year's.
So how did you hook up in Austria? how did you go about planning to get people together in Austria?
We just Facebooked each other and emailed each other and said, look, we're meeting in Vienna on the 29th of December. We'll be leaving on the 4th, so come on, guys, book your tickets. And we met there.
How many people went?
Altogether, in the end, we end up being 6.
Fantastic. And where'd you meet? How do you say, this is the point we're going to stand, I'm going to have red
like
rose.
Like under the clocks or something, you know.
Well,
the Glockenspiel.
Well,
the Glockenspiel.
And, well, an Austrian friend of ours, he sort of waited for us at the airport. I arrived second with, and one of my friends just arrived half an hour before me. So we tried to book the flights within like 2 hours difference, but there was some delays because of the weather in London. So we ended up picking a girl from Mexico coming from London the next day.
Fantastic.
Which delayed a little bit of the Vienna tour.
Now, where did you stay in Vienna?
I personally stayed in the Grand Hotel, which is a great, great hotel to stay in. But the rest have rented a sort of an apartment for 4 days, which is a great apartment. It's a huge apartment with it's got like a classical theme to it, and it's very well heated, and it's very warm and cozy, and it's good.
And I suppose you spent a lot of time at the apartment visiting your friends.
We did, especially at night. But unfortunately, I had to leave and go and sleep in the hotel, which was good. It's a pretty luxurious hotel.
Bit of a time out.
Yeah, it sounds terrible. I'm really sorry for you.
Yeah, the Grand in Vienna, huh? You know.
Now, as an architecture graduate that's working on his certification to become an architect, what was it like going to Vienna and to Austria?
Well, Vienna has got a typical European, an old European feel to it. It's like Paris, you know, but I mean, the architecture is a bit different in terms of heights of buildings and planning, but the weather, the freshness, you know, the sort of hovering around 0 minus 1, you never sweat, you're in your thick clothing, it's just, you know, having to drink here and there a wine, you know, just walking around was fantastic. I just loved Vienna. It was actually, I've been heartbroken in Vienna.
Heartbroken?
Yeah, you just love the city so much, and you love the people, the fantastic people, and they love Australians too.
And you miss it. The moment you left, you had the yearning to come back?
I wanted to find a job there for at least another year, but it's quite tough, you know, at this stage. You know, I'm going through my registration preparation, and I have to be in Australia, and it's a milestone for me, so I have to come back here. Which I am here now.
And we're glad you're joining us here on the Detours Travel Show. We'll be here till 1 o'clock today here on Joy 94.9. And if you're listening and you have a question or a suggestion, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at onair@joy.org.au or you can SMS 0427JOY949.
And coming up, we'll hear George diverting through places such as Italy and Slovenia.
And that's the gorgeous Diana Krall with Wonderful and Marvellous here on Joy 94.9. And this is the Detours Travel Show with Jodie, Lindsay and Greg. And we're joined today by George, and we've been talking about George having grown up in Lebanon and then moved to Australia, immigrated on his own, which is, I think, is a very courageous move to do that and then create a new life. And now you're an Australian citizen, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And you were in Austria and Vienna with friends over Christmas. And then what did you decide to do from there?
Well, I arrived in Austria on the 28th of December. The full group was formed on the 29th. And we toured Vienna for the 2 days. On the 30th of December, we went to a city called Graz, which has got a special charm to it. It's almost like a picturesque city where you see probably in movies, in romantic movies. It was very romantic. There was hardly any traffic on the streets. Everyone was preparing for the celebration, the New Year celebration. And we decided to stay in Graz. We did some architectural touring. There's heaps of interesting architectural insertions here and there. And there's this clock on the mountains that overlooks the whole of the Graz city, and the plan was to go for New Year celebration inside a nightclub that used to be a mine inside the mountain. So the whole experience was surreal because you have to go for like 400 meters on a ramp, strolling inside the mountain, and then all of a sudden there's a turn left, and there's this huge cylinder of rock that's got all the lights and all the ventilation necessary, so for a big party, and there's a lot of strict rules about glass, electronics, or anything that could cause fire because there's no fire exits.
Oh goodness!
So you can feel
no smoking, of course.
No smoking for sure, and alcohol is only provided by the sort of the the group who's doing that party, and it was great. It was, the sound was fantastic because they've accommodated all the equipment. They've tested, engineered, and all the sound around the shape of the room, and the lighting was almost surreal because it's changed in lights, and there was lots of projection on all over the cylindrical form of that hall. Unfortunately, I didn't take any pictures of that, but I did take a video of how to get in and how to get out. It's just... And the entrance is just between two sort of vernacular architectural houses. You wouldn't even consider that there would be a nightclub inside this mansion. It's just surreal.
That'd be fabulous. So after the big party, which I'm fascinated, that's where I'm spending next New Year's Eve, I've just decided. After the party and the New Year's Day, where did you head from there?
We went to the Alps, where we rented a chalet, and there weren't much snow there. Like, I'm talking not metres of snow, probably half a metre around us, and we decided on New Year's Day to go skiing, which is something I haven't done for 8 years, and I've put on some weight, so it was pretty tough skiing again. And all my European friends were, like, full-on skiers, and they're snowboarders, and they were showing off, and I was falling every 25 metres. And the sad bit is I wasn't able to get up, so I needed someone to pull me up. And, you know, when you see an Austrian, like, five-year-old skiing at high speed on the slopes, and I'm, like, you know, 110 kilo of meat sitting on the snow, it wasn't a pleasant experience, I tell you.
Yeah, but see, you've got to be kind to yourself. Those kids are virtually, you know, born on the slopes and you know, popped into the skis and off they go.
Yeah. You're born in skis, I believe.
I'm a tobogganer myself.
I did that once or twice.
I'd like to say that I'm a tobogganer too.
No, too cold, far too cold. So after skiing, did you make your way back or?
After skiing, we rested for the rest of the day. We had a great dinner, which is based on, apparently the Austrians would have for the first night a pig nose for dinner. So we went and bought a pig nose covered with pig jelly, and we had to slice it, and then we had to try it. And
what was it like?
I can't tell you. It's a bit mushy / barbecue pork bun / it's just terrible. But I had to try it. It's part of the Austrian, and we out of respect for our Austrian friend, and he made some kind of it's like a four type fish salad with sauerkraut and lots of pickles, which was extremely high in salt, extremely acidic, and we had to eat it as well. which I found a bit better than the pig nose.
That's just grotesque.
And I did some of my famous baba ganoush and hummus.
Oh, yummy.
So, yeah, I mean, everyone did a little bit of his national dish. The Mexican girl did buy some, you know, the guacamole and the tortilla.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like almost like a small international party under the snow, and it started snowing.
Oh, beautiful.
So after finishing with the Alps, we went straight, because we're right on the border of Italy, so we decided to drive to his native sort of little city, Villach, and from there we drove to Italy. It was perfect. We went to Tarvizio on northern Italy. We had some really nice pasta. And on the way back, we decided to go and have sort of kind of dinner in Slovenia, quick dinner for 1.5 hours, and it started snowing like there's no other day. And the scenery was like full-on dry on the way there. It was white on the way back. Wow. So the cars were a bit struggling. We had to drive on very, very slow pace. Arrived in Slovenia a half an hour behind schedule, and... We had like a very light dinner there, and we had to drive quickly back to Vienna because it's getting heavier.
Can I ask, George, because this would be the first time that you went to these countries.
Yes.
And you virtually jumped in a car and started driving around, you know, like you went from Italy to Slovenia. Mm. Did you use a GPS?
No, not at all.
Take your Melways or
there's signage
anything
everywhere.
Like that? No.
Your Melways doesn't work there.
or the you know, European equivalent thereof.
No, there's heaps
of signage. Melwebski, this Slovenian one.
It's quite, it's very, I mean, there's signage everywhere. You won't be lost at all. But It's quite enjoyable, actually, to drive. I mean, you just take the autobahn.
Autobahn.
And you just drive at 250 kilometres an hour.
Heaven.
Good heavens.
Yeah. I've never driven in on the other side of the road, on the right-hand side of the road, and I do get a bit freaked out, even being a passenger, because I'm thinking, oh, this car's coming towards us, and they're, you know. But in Lebanon, do they drive on the left or the right?
The opposite of Australia.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, so I'm used to drive on each, on any side, really. Mm-hmm. But I always struggle when I go back to Europe or to back home that whenever I'm going into the car, I go onto the passenger seat now. If I'm driving the car. And it's very natural. Yeah, I just go.
Where's that steering wheel? Someone's stolen the pedals.
Yeah. Now, how did the travel dollar go and the spend? What did you take in travel currency and how did it go through the journey so far?
Well, I took a little bit of US dollars back home, but in Austria, I just used my Commonwealth Bank card, basically, and the credit cards. I just didn't need any. I normally don't carry cash on me. I'm not a cash carrying person, so I used the credit card whenever I needed to buy something. And I think it's not a very economical way of doing things because you get international transfer rates. But it was fantastic. It was just great. You know, whenever you needed cash, you'd just pull out euros straight out of the ATM. Mm.
Mm. It's definitely worth checking with your bank, though, before you go to make sure that the card you have has that functionality. Because there's some building societies or sort of co-op type places that may have a Visa debit card, but it's not linked with the Cirrus system and to actually withdraw cash. So it's definitely worth trying. But it's great that it'll work for you.
Yeah, and I went to LA in September as well, and actually the same concept, you know. No money on me, just travelling with a credit card. It was fine.
Very good. Now, we'll continue on in just a few moments talking with George. And I think when we come back after this song, we'll go to Turkey and Lebanon again and then United Arab Emirates. You've been everywhere, man. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
You're listening to D-Tiers. It's the D-Tiers show. D-Tours on 94.9. And that was the fabulous Flashdance, What a Feeling, by the even more fabulous Irene Cara. I got through it, Jody.
Well done.
And today we're talking to George, who was born in Lebanon, raised in Lebanon, and has had some fabulous travel experiences since and is now living in Australia. And I think when we went to that short break and that wonderful song, we were talking about going to Turkey. We were just about to encroach on that part of your journey.
Yes, on the way back from Australia, we drove back to Vienna and we had to say goodbye. It was a teary goodbye.
You didn't take any canned pig's noses or anything back with you, did you?
Leave the pig nose in Austria.
Yes.
Actually, I tried looking for it here. I couldn't find it.
Well, you can. I actually remember when I was a kid, my stepfather was Ukrainian, and my mother used to make Ukrainian food, and they make a pig's head aspic. Okay, so it's a jelly. Mm-hmm. But it was nothing to come home after a night out and open the fridge door to grab some Tim Tams and a milk, and there's this pig's head staring up at you with a big smile on his
Yum.
Face. So, yeah.
Sounds like one of those horror movies, like with rabbits being boiled on the stove.
It's pigs for Europeans. Oh.
So I flew back into Turkey for 10 hours.
Now, had you been to Turkey before, George?
Yes, I have been when I was 17 years old.
So there's a few years have passed since your last visit.
Yes, a few years have passed, and I had two Turkish friends that I've met with. They were working, so I had lunch with them on that day. And it was pretty rainy, so I had to do the quick tour of Istanbul and then flew back to Beirut.
What did you see in Istanbul?
I did go back to Hagia Sophia, the Blue Mosque, and the Dolmabahce Palace, and I walked around the marina. It was all right. The weather didn't help at all because, you know, I had my snow gear on me because my rest of the baggage was still in the airport being transferred. So it was a very physically demanding journey walking around the city, but I made sure that I'm on the airport on right time. We had a bit of trouble because there were a lot of storms that night, so we had to wait on the tarmac for an hour inside the plane to take off. Once I was in Beirut, I had I had enough time to meet with my family and sit down with them, and especially my grandma. She's growing old, but she's very alive, and And she expressed how much she missed me and if I probably have to start looking for a job closer to her.
Oh.
So, which was part of the original plan. I went to Abu Dhabi on the way back from Beirut. I stayed there 2 days and looking for a sort of job, which I did. I got 3 offers. Mm. But
oh, well done.
I knew that I had to come back to Australia for the registration. Mm-hmm. So it's something, a must that I have to do. You know?
So there's a potential you will move offshore and take up one of those jobs.
There might be a potential of moving offshore, yes,
yeah,
for the next 2 to 3 years.
So if someone goes to a country like the Emirates with Abu Dhabi,
yeah,
how do you go about getting a CV out there once you arrive? And you've got a short time frame. You're in for a couple of days. How do you go about planning your CV out there?
Some of my friends who are working as architects in Abu Dhabi, they facilitated that a lot. So it's through them that I set an interview, because they knew what time I was coming, they knew what time I was leaving, so they sort of arranged them in that 2 days. There's nothing in tourism to do in Abu Dhabi. I sort of knew what I was expecting, so it was purely professional.
It's really a commercial hub, isn't
yes,
it, of it
Abu
is.
Dhabi?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You'd just you'd be surprised by the scale of the projects they do, but other than that, it's pretty hot, it's pretty warm, you have to be inside, you know, unless you've got heaps of money to shop non-stop.
Mm.
I mean...
Mm.
You know, there's not much that you can do out there except when it's mild in winter.
And now as an expat Aussie, you'd have to connect with people that like to share the same interests that Aussies do, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So there must be a bit of an expat Aussie sort of population in Abu Dhabi too.
I think there is a fairly large population there from Australia. Mm.
A lot of people don't know, but the Emiratis are actually only 5% of the overall population
That's
of
right.
the United Arab Emirates, so the indigenous local people. So everyone's from somewhere else.
Is it really?
Bangladesh, India, a lot of expats from New Zealand, South
okay.
Africa, there for commercial projects and or in construction.
Okay.
And in general, Australians are loved in the United Arab Emirates more than, let's say, the Americans are, just purely from a political point of view, you know. So they tend to lean towards Australians as Westerners to be in their countries rather than Americans or British.
And they have a range of other professions too, like teachers. They've got shared teaching, I suppose, opportunities between Education Department of Victoria and the UAE as well. You can go and teach in states over there for a couple of years,
yes,
as well as other professions. So when you move, and if you move, if you accept that, and you probably would, wouldn't you, where would you live? How do you get accommodation, and what's the environment like to live in over there?
In general, part of the package, they will fly you there. And if you have an interview in Abu Dhabi, they will fly you from Australia to the interview and back on the same day or the same weekend. They will help you a lot in visa issues and accommodation. So it's part of the deal. They will negotiate everything with you, your stay, whether you need a car, telephone, everything. It's sort of a package that's, you know, you're there to fulfill a certain job, and this is what's on offer, whether you accept it or not. So I don't have a problem with it, because I do speak the language, and that's a big plus.
It would be.
So, yeah, it would be a big plus, because I can communicate with the everyday people rather than sitting in your office, you know, just speaking English and nothing else. So.
But do you have an Aussie accent with your Arabic?
I can put it on, mate. I've got a cross between Australian / New Zealand / South African accent, you know, and like I've been getting all these questions. Are you American? Are you Australian? And like
Well, we actually had an email, or SMS rather, from Luke, who asked, well, he's actually travelling to... Berlin and in July, and he's got 1 day in Doha. Have you been there?
No, I haven't been to Qatar lately.
Yeah, okay.
Well, so Qatar has changed a lot since I have been, because my father used to travel a lot, and I was like 6 years old when I was in Qatar.
Oh, so if anyone's listening and has got some suggestions of what Luke could do in 1 day in Doha, you can email us through. I haven't been there myself, but...
Look, Luke can put on a show.
Yeah,
he can
busk,
do a one-man
Luke,
show.
Just busk. You know, it'll be 3 and 6 or something for a license for the day and make some local currency. What else can we suggest?
Eat, Luke.
Yeah, eat.
Just eat. There's some very nice Middle Eastern food.
That's almost a musical, isn't it? Eat Luke.
Yeah. Eat Luke.
So where do you cook at home mainly, George, here in Melbourne for Lebanese food? Sort of comfort food, or
we do cook a lot. Like we're crazy with cooking here. But unfortunately, you know, you've got, because of your work, you have to go out a lot, and which It's okay. I really love the Melbourne food. It's great, but I prefer, you know, home cooking. Lebanese particularly, but in general, I prefer something cooked at home.
Mm. But it's good to have that mix. Like, I notice now that even when you go to an Aussie barbecue, there'll be some tzatziki or something like that to put on your plate with your meat. You know, we've sort of incorporated all those wonderful flavours.
Isn't that great about Melbourne?
Oh, absolutely.
And I must say...
You know, there's nothing for the waistline, but who cares?
But I must say, I mean, there's no better coffee than the Melbourne's coffee.
Really?
Yeah, I've had coffees in Italy, in Slovenia, in...
In Italy, it's not good.
Well, it wasn't as good as Melbourne.
Doesn't coffee come from Italy?
Espresso.
Yeah, I enjoyed one coffee in Vienna. It was one of those high-class patisserie places where they really perfected the coffee and the way they've served it in sort of very fine porcelain, and it was great. But other than that, I didn't like the coffees, but I did like the Austrian sausages.
Yum.
Best. Are they hot sausages?
They're hot, they're mild, they come in every shape and form.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, with lots of mustard.
Yum.
That's good.
Yeah, they do that, you know, like bratwurst sausage with sauerkraut and mashed potato and lots of, you know, mustard.
Yeah, it's very heartwarming in the nights of Vienna.
Comfort food, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Isn't it funny how conversations always come back to food?
Yeah,
I'm feeling hungry now. What's for lunch?
Now, on the way back from all this, you went back to Lebanon to return before you returned home to Melbourne.
Yes.
And then you had time to actually put your bags, unpack your bags, feed up and relax.
Yeah, I went home. I went back to my room. I looked at all the car magazines that I had. You know, it's just a bit of... Because I was by myself. There was no one there. Mm-hmm. Everyone went back to Australia on the 3rd of January. So I had 2.5 weeks by myself at home. It was pretty emotional, you know, just seeing the things that you used to, your old bedroom, the books, the encyclopedias everywhere, you know. Like, and everything is still intact. Nothing has moved.
It's like a shrine. Isn't it?
It is. It is a bit of a shrine.
So your parents haven't rented it out or turned it into a sewing room or something?
Sewing room.
And were your folks at home when you were there?
No one was there, no. My mum was in Australia at this time.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And but mainly cousins and family. I used to visit every day and, I mean, I had a really good time. The food was all right in terms of Lebanese, was great, but when it comes to international food, it wasn't that good. Again, in Melbourne, you've got a better exposure to international food, whether it's Asian or Italian or whatever cuisine that is.
Yeah,
it's hard to decide on a Saturday night. You know, it's not what will we eat, it's, you know, like what country will we visit tonight than anything, which is nice.
Actually, last Saturday I went to the Victorian Multicultural Commission ball.
Dressed as Lady Gaga.
No, because you see, I've been moving house and I only had one glamour dress and, you know, that was about it and a bit of lippy. But it was just amazing. There was over 1,000 people at Crown Casino and the Palladium Room and wonderful cross-section of people from all around the world who have made Victoria home. And the entertainment was so fantastic. And the ladies on our table, and they were all ladies apart from the two friends I brought with me, were from the Middle East, and they were just fantastic, a really, really fantastic night.
That's excellent, Jodie. It's great. And that's that cultural part about being here in Melbourne. If you've got any travel tales and experiences you've had sharing cultural experiences around the world, we'll give you that email again. You can always email us at detours@joy.org.au. You can also SMS us during the week to 0427JOY949 and just ask them to pass it on to the Detours team. We're happy to incorporate your travels into our program, like we've done today with you, George.
Thank you, guys.
It's been a pleasure having you here.
Thanks
for sharing the great times you have going back to Lebanon, but travelling through the Middle East and also into Europe as well.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to share it with everyone else.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. So stay tuned now for Cravings, talking about food, coming up after 1 o'clock after the news, and we'll have Anthony coming up soon with the news here on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.